So in preparation for this, I don't know if everyone knows, this is kind of like a testimony based talk. That's what I've been asked to do. I've been asked to share my testimony. And I just kind of, in my processing and praying over kind of what God wanted me to highlight today throughout my testimony, because I've got a bit of time. Is that my time to talk? Cool. Okay. So about a large section. It's between 15 and 45. I don't think I'll reach 45. You'll get to your Sunday roast before that. It's fine. I've been praying through kind of what God wants me to share. And actually, it'll come a little bit later that what I do now. So I do some stuff for the CUs and universities, for the Christian unions. And the way we run our events, the way we do testimonies, is more like interview-based stuff. So this is the first time that I've ever had to share my testimony. Without like someone interviewing me, so it's really interesting. So I want to make sure I don't waffle. I want to make sure I don't just go off on random tangents. And that's the Spirit guides me to do that. So I've been really praying carefully and being like, God, would you highlight the real specific things you want me to say today to the people that are here? Because the only actual other time that I've done this before my testimony is with James and Heatwave Deepa, which is obviously for the younger guys. So different things are highlighted at different times. So. Yeah, in my introduction, I really want to thank you guys for having a church here. I'm 21, and I've lived in Felter all my life, and I haven't known Jesus all my life, but I've known the people of Felter all of my life, and from my own story, I know what it's like to be broken in Felter, and I know what the places are like. And actually, I just want to share a story from this week. So I go in the gym just down the road, and there's only about three boys from my primary school that go to that gym. One's called Shazwa, he's an Iraqi refugee. And I met him for the first time in maybe 10 years, which is crazy because we were best friends in school. He was wicked at football and he was on my side of the football team, so he was a good friend to have. But basically, I met him in the gym and we were just training together, we were just chatting. I was like, well, what are you up to? And he was like, oh, I've just bought a barbershop. I was like, amazing. That's crazy because he was up where Steve and Becky live, so up in Oakway. His family came over as just refugees and like he came into our primary school and he didn't really talk much English, developed that obviously. And he was just really crammed into a tiny house. I think it was maybe like a two-bedroom house, and it was like five of them. So it was really, really crammed, and that was their story, really. So they were there. And then there was other boys that I was friends with who were up there too, and kind of my primary school days were spent up there, just chilling around that area as well with kind of James. So it was two sides of my story in that sense. But I was really good mates with the local boys who have grown up now. So basically, I was like, who else comes to this gym that I would know? He was like, there's only two other boys that you know, Reese, and they're both in prison. Oh man, like that's crazy. There's two ways of like the Felter story. You either make it or you sell drugs and you go to prison. Like that's the nature of the Felter estate. And so I really wanted to share that. I'm really thankful that you guys are here. There's a desperate need for Jesus in this community, as there is for every community. But it really means a lot to me that just living over the road that you'd be here and you'd be dedicated to my community. So I'm really thankful for that. I love the kind of, so I wanted to thank you because I love Paul's letters. But obviously he thanks the churches that he's speaking in or writing to from prison. So I really wanted just to be able to do that and thank you guys and honor you guys and say that I'm really blessed just to have this opportunity to speak in a community that I absolutely love and I adore. So one sec, I'm just going to drop my Bible on the floor because there's not much room on this thing. So basically the way I'm going to work it as well is I've got kind of three segments of what I'm going to say today. Three different sides of my story, or three different developments that come. So I want to honour you, I want to do it in a way that is meticulous and systematic, and also kind of, I don't just want to say things that happened to me, I want to say my character in those places, in those times. So I'm just going to pray that kind of run out of the Spirit would just kind of guide me. I have got stuff, don't worry, it's not just going to be 100% waffle. There is some development here. But I'm just going to pray that whatever God wants me to say, I'll say, and whatever doesn't, I'll just swear. God, you're glorious. You're so, so good. You're so faithful. And I just want to take all glory from this story. I don't want it just to be my words. I don't want it just to be my story because, you know, what is that in the face of eternity, Father? But I want it to be that your glory is on display. Your glory is on display through the words, through the passages that I kind of open, Father, and that you would just receive some honor from that. Father, we love you. We adore you. Would chains be broken today? Would hearts be open? Chains be shattered even, Father. Would they just be shattered? And would you free your people to dance with you? And would you let that happen today, Father? Amen. So I will start at me at like a younger age. It's a bit kind of blurry though, like from I guess like 6 through to maybe 15. There's a lot of blurred lines in there, but I'm just going to talk about what my character looked like, because I did grow up in a church background, but disclaimer, I messed up. And I messed up quite big as well. And, like, I wish I had a story where I just saw God's glory from the age of one, or straight out of the womb, I was praising God. I wasn't. I was in church, but I wasn't praising God. I was praising the football pitch after. And that was kind of my story. We went to church. There was a lot of boys in my church. I grew up in Highfields Church. And I would be on my phone the whole time texting. And then after the service, we were lucky we had this massive kids hall. And it's also alternatively a five-a-side pitch for all the boys who go there. So I'd go to church purely for the reason that I wanted to go and play football after. And that was kind of my younger years. So I just wanted to highlight my character, because I didn't, as I said earlier, I don't just want to say some stories of me messing up. I want to know the reason why I did that. So I've been really kind of blessed to be able to look back over my story and see why I did some things that messed up. So yeah, if I could just highlight some of my characters as a child growing up through to the age of about 15, 16. So growing up, I was quite a big kid. I was quite fat. And that, like, it was kind of, I laugh about it now, but ultimately, being an overweight kid, you have insecurities. Like, you have a lot of insecurities when your mates go to the beach and they're able to take the top off and not be embarrassed by their body, or when you kind of, your mates are being, or the girls are attracted to your mates but not you, even though you're in the same group as them. And one of those things as a kid that mean quite a lot to you, or playing football, and there was one time in primary school where I was playing football for my team, so for primary. And we're playing, I don't know, probably Peter Lee or something. And like the kids on the other team, like I was there just playing. And they were laughing at me because I was fat. And that was like, as a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old kid who's playing football, who's overweight, it hurts when people poke at that and use that as an insult. Luckily, I was okay at football, so I could chuck some goals in and silence them. But it wasn't nice to have that anyway as a 9, 10-year-old kid. So I felt kind of unloved, and I felt unwelcome in certain places. I felt like I didn't deserve to be cared for, I didn't deserve to be loved. Even though that wasn't kind of my experience in my home, like my parents loved me, my family loved me, I was never rejected by those. But just, it seemed like the negatives in certain people's insults to me would hurt me way more than being loved by someone close to me. And it was hard, and I let those things fester in my heart, and they were really things that affected the way I would live. So I'd be anxious over little things, like I was desperately scared of new starts. If there was any new start coming, I'd hate it. I didn't want anything to be different, because if I was comfortable in a place, it meant quite a lot to me. But as soon as something was thrown in, like a curveball, the biggest nightmare for me would be moving school, because I had mates in school. So like, if I had to move school and go through like insults again, that would just kill me off. I felt like I didn't really deserve to be loved. I felt like an outcast. I felt like I wasn't deserving of anything. And a massive one for me, and it's a weird one kind of to say, but like a massive thing for me that I was desperately scared of taking risks as well. There was nothing in my life that was risky at the time, other than maybe Sporting Cardiff City, because there were massive letdowns. But like ultimately, if there was anything that came out, God, do you want this opportunity? I was like, no, I don't know how it's going to play out. I was terrified of failing. Not in every sense, like in school I was just kind of a joker. But I say, well, actually that changed. So year 7, going into Bishop Lander for year 7, I was desperate to do well. Like I was scared of turning up without my homework or anything. And I was, because it was a massive new start, obviously going to high school, I realized that I had kind of two options. I either work hard and just be an outcast, like in my own little corner hiding away, or I just let go of my work and just become friends with everyone. I just enjoy school and not work. That's not the only two options, but it felt like that in my head. So I chose the second option. I let my work slide. I still do it. I'm still like fairly hard working, but I was never going to reject a party if there was an exam the next day. That's kind of the way I was living my life then. So I'm just going to highlight from that some situations that are an outworking of that character. So I said about like primary school, so I had that one scenario where just I was insulted for being fat, and actually then going to just an open day in Cantonian, which is a school I was meant to go to, but obviously my parents chose Bishop Orlando, but I went to an open day there because we were a feeder school, and I was desperate for the toilet on this just open day, and we're all in the hall. So all of us kids from all over, we're all in the hall, Pennsylvania, Peterley, wherever. We're making kind of new friends. And I was really desperate for the toilet at break time, but I went to the door, and then all these big boys were like in the hallway, and they looked at me and they pointed at me and laughed at me because I was fat again. And I was in the hallway, I was desperate for the toilet, and I just ran back in and I just waited for another 3 hours, even though I was busting, because I couldn't handle it. And it was, I remember, I highlighted in my heart, this one phrase I said to my mum, because for me, like, Christianity wasn't relationship, it was just, it's a label that I've got, and my parents are Christian, so I'm a Christian. So I remember saying to my mum, I was like, if you send me there, I'm just going to become a chav. I was like, I'm not going to be a Christian, no chance. And they were, again, the only two options I had in my head. I don't know why I never thought there was more than two options for anything, but I did. And ultimately, I was like, I can't go there, mum. Not everyone in Cantonia is a chav. I just want to put that out there. I've got some great mates in Cantonia. And that was it for me. I was like, nope, as a year six going in there, I either just go nuts or I go to a different school, mum. I was like, there are your options. I am not going to be a Christian in that place. There is no way. I'm fat, so I've got to hide from that. And if I go out there and say I'm a Christian, they're going to kill me, mum. So, no chance. Thankfully, sent me to Bishop Lander, which isn't that much better in that sense, or it wasn't at the time, but it felt a little bit more calmer. But that didn't challenge faith to be something that I had trials over, because I would say I was a Christian, but it was a label. My character didn't implement the fact that that was real, ultimately, in my life. So I then developed just kind of a desire for what everyone else wanted. So I loved PlayStation, nothing wrong with it, but I spent excess hours playing it. I loved my friends, so I'd go out and spend all my time with my friends. Nothing wrong with it, but my desire was to be popular, my desire was all those things that were godly as such. So it would potentially go like 3 years without even reading the Bible, without opening it. And ultimately every Sunday it was me texting away in my Sunday service and then go back into school. And actually, as I said, like in year seven, I had this really big mental thing where I was like, well, I either work really hard now or I just make a load of mates. And for maybe the first 6 months, Cardiff City was my biggest boost. So every time Cardiff City games would come about, I was like, yes, this is great, I've got something to look forward to. And sometimes I'd have to go like 2 weeks every day looking forward to something big, like a Cardiff City game, which is crazy because I couldn't face my reality. I didn't like my reality, I didn't like who I was, I didn't like what I was doing, so it was really hard for me to develop anything other than just a desire for the next big thing. Cardiff City games aren't the next big thing, apparently, because I had a lot of seasons of just dry spells for Cardiff City games. But like it seemed enough for me at the time, but it wasn't enough to satisfy me. So obviously because Cardiff City aren't a top four Premier League side, I have to get something else because that wasn't enough for me. I was coming home from games and just eating a ton of Chinese to try and get through it. I was always allowed to Chinese after a Cardiff City game. Kind of loved it for that reason too. It wasn't enough. Cardiff City wasn't enough to keep me going, so I'd add some new things in. So I'd try and be better friends with people, I'd try and do more things with people. So I remember going into year nine, my first time down in Poncana Fields with a lot of the boys from school, so all of them would go. There was this place that sold booze to underage people. Ironically, it was quite close to the prison, which is interesting. I wouldn't do it there if I was doing that, which I'm not. But he was. So all the boys used to go, it's like 13-year-old boys, and just get loads of alcohol. And obviously 13-year-olds don't know how to handle that. I didn't say part of my character that I felt like I was kind of self-righteous. Like if you could describe me as anything, it'd probably be the worst of the Pharisees, where they would go to the temple, boom, they find status, they got status from that, and then outside of that, their private life is just minging. That would probably be the description of me, but loosely I wasn't, like I was connected to God in a sense of, yeah, I'm a Christian, but I didn't know it, I didn't treasure it, it wasn't something that I really wanted in my life. So, really interestingly then, coming into year nine, I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to drink, I don't think I should drink because I'm meant to be a Christian, I don't think I should do drugs because I think I'm meant to be a Christian, I don't think I should have sex because I'm meant to be a Christian, but I didn't savor those things, I just saw them as things. So I was like, in public, I can't do these things. In private, maybe I can. I went to Poncana Fields with all my mates. So there's maybe 80 of us there. And they would go in week in, week out at this point. It was crazy. I don't know why their parents let them get. Because they were coming from Poncana at 13. That was just absolutely outrageous. So I was there with them. And it was just the weirdest thing. Because I was like, well, in public, I can't drink. Because I'm meant to be a Christian. So. Even though it meant absolutely zero to me, I didn't drink, but what I saw there was enough to put me on drink for life. Like one of these girls who just wasted, she smashed a lug with my mate's head, and he got knocked out, so he was out cold. And then two of the girls then got paralytic. So there was three ambulances there, one for this boy who was concussed because he had a massive lug smacked over his head, And two, there was this paralytic and drinking loads. So I was like, well, in reality, I don't even want this life. So that was something I tipped off as something I didn't want, something that wouldn't satisfy, which is quite lucky, like from an early age, that actually that happened, because otherwise I would have turned to it. So I was like, there, I'm not going to do that. But these are about my best mates, so all my time was still spent with them. It wasn't like I turned away from what they were desiring. So then furthering on from that, obviously house parties become a thing, like more of the parties become a thing. And so I went to a lot of the house parties, like growing into like 15, 16. And that was where I had to make a decision, ultimately, of do I choose this life that I see people live, but I'm not living, I've never lived, I've never seen God. I know that he's kind of there as a distant thing. Do I even know that he's real? Is he real enough to change everything I do about my life and the reason I live my life? Or, alternatively, is he just a lie and actually what these guys are chasing real? I think probably the major reason I chose what my friends had is because they were my closest friends, and I had no tight-knit Christian friends in my life. And I was going to different youth groups, so there's a lot of kind of like youth groups I went to, but still, like, my heart wasn't right. And if your heart's not right before God, then you're never going to see him properly. You're never going to treasure him properly. So, for me, that kind of the decision was made easier by the fact that the people I spent most of my time with were people who didn't know God, so they weren't chasing him. So it was normal for me to do those things. So, going into house parties and some crazy ones. Like, I think one of the like most eye-opening things for me looking back now is there was this one house party, Radder and Bishop were really linked at the time. So it was a Radder girl that was having a house party. Maybe like 90 people in her house with like two bedrooms. So there was a lot of people crammed into this one house. And for the guys who wanted to do stuff with other people, they were crammed into everything. So like, literally like people's wardrobes, there was people doing stuff in. And I think one of the things that really highlights my heart was wrong at the time is I didn't see anything wrong with that for those people. Like in that house party, I didn't do anything, but I didn't see what they were doing as wrong. And that really hurts my heart now, that there was opportunities like looking back now, obviously I love Jesus now, but looking back, like, oh wow, like I was in a bad place. Like my head was just wrong. I didn't see those things as bad. I didn't see women as something who were God's treasures. I didn't see men as something that were equally treasured by God and valued in his eyes. I just saw life as this one big mess. And that's really impacting for someone who's going through that. As a 15-year-old, to see that happening and for your eyes being opened up to a lot of life at that point, really. There's a lot of development that goes on in those years. To see that's just the norm for these areas. Like, my heart was just developed by that. And transformed by that, which is obviously not right, but that's what it was. So I would then go into a relationship with someone who didn't know Jesus, because obviously it just didn't even cross my mind at the time. And then I always chased a life that was totally just comfortable. Like, ultimately, I lost a lot of weight between the age of like 13 and 14. So I was a little bit more attractive to girls, I guess. And this girl was like branded as like one of the prettier girls in the school. So she took an interest in me, so ultimately I took an interest in her, because kind of the first time someone would take an interest in me, obviously I was going to say yes, because I never had that really from people. So I would end up in a relationship that would last 2.5 years, and would be probably the most negatively affecting thing in my life. It was a great relationship to the world. Like, we cared for each other, it was fine, like there was nothing that went wrong, but my heart still wasn't right in it. And I knew that, because I knew that I didn't love her deep down. I was just with her because it gave a status in the school that you were with someone. And going into sixth form, like with someone, or going to parties with someone, it was bigger. It was like you were more popular in that sense. Like I'd be closer with her friends then, so I'd go to parties with her friends. And like my heart, like looking back, my heart was just wrong. Like my heart was not in a good place, even with everything the world said it had to offer. Like I turned my grades around, so I had better grades, I had opportunities that I was going to go for. I had a girlfriend that, you know, everyone wants to get married. I had, like, the parties that you were meant to have at that age. I had the popularity. Yeah, I wasn't fulfilled. And I would always say, I had a lot of fun, but I wasn't fulfilled. It's like, I'm not willing to chase a life that is fun without fulfillment. I'm not here just to have fun. I want something that grips my heart. I want something that turns me around and stops me dead in my tracks, that I see as beautiful. I had to have that, but I still wouldn't have that for 2.5 years. So I think another just incident that I would highlight is that I love designing, so I'm a designer now, but I loved it back then as well when I was designing. And one of the things that is really weird for me is that I accepted an apprenticeship that was in nothing to do with design. It was just in being a lighting man on music sets. So I just took some like work experience with my old neighbor who was doing some work for this upcoming artist and like Manic Street Preachers. So I did some work with those guys and I was just like, well, that was their runner. He offered me an apprenticeship and I was like, yeah, cool, I'll do it. Like, it was a low risk strategy to having a fairly good future because I wanted a comfortable future. I wanted a good job. I wanted money to come in. I wanted to be able to look after whoever was going to be my wife. Like, I wanted that and that was my heart's desire. So weirdly for me, looking back now, I'm like, I accepted an apprenticeship and something I had zero interest in doing. There was nothing in my heart that wanted to be a lighting technician on music sets. I couldn't care less about tech stuff. Really, like, I mean, upstairs tech stuff. I like kind of design stuff, but anything that's like moving buttons on soundbars, I just don't get it. So it was weird. Like, looking back, I'm like, I don't know why I accepted it, but and it's one thing I'm massively thankful to God for is that He stepped in and destroyed that apprenticeship. Basically, He gave, well, He didn't give someone a heart attack, but the guy who offered me the apprenticeship had a heart attack, and his company folded. And that, like, randomly, I'd said that I wanted to stay in sixth form because I wanted to enjoy sixth form, but I knew that after sixth form I was having this apprenticeship. So halfway through sixth form, this guy has a heart attack and he calls me. He's like, well, the apprenticeship is gone. Like, my business is gone. Like, I can't take you on anymore. And that crushed me in a weird way because I was like, it was comfortable. It was risk-free. Like, it was everything that I want my life to be, yet it didn't satisfy. And I'd have to carry on and do something else. So again, I'd go and do something that was totally just honouring myself, and I'd apply for a uni degree that had no thought behind it. I like design, so I applied for it. I don't think there's actually anything wrong particularly in that, but I know that my heart wasn't right in that. So it was no consultation. It was everyone's going to uni. I'm going to go to uni. Again, fairly risk-free. I knew everyone else was doing it, so I was like, it's the next step, it's logical. So I'd go on to do that. And this is kind of where everything starts changing for me, because I now have literally everything that you want at that age. Like, I had a job, so I was working in JD, so I had an income, I had a discount on nice trainers, which is really important for me. I had an addiction to trainers at one point, so every paycheck that came in, I was buying a new pair of trainers, so that was really good. Like, ultimately, my societal status went up from that moment against my peers. I was starting to get a little bit better haircuts. Other than that, I just had a 4 all over, which never looks good. Well, sorry, they're American 4. I don't think there is. I hope they so I was starting to get better haircuts. I was getting a bit more wiser with what I was doing. But again, only in a worldly sense. Like, and still, my heart wasn't right. And still, I knew my heart was just broken. And like, I understand it now to be a heart that was broken and desiring something greater than what I had. Yeah, I couldn't find it, and it was stupid because my parents were still going to church. I was still dipping in and out of church at this point. So if I just if I'd lifted my head and texted, I probably could have met with Jesus at that moment, but I didn't. I refused to. I was like, I'm in church, but I'm still not seeking. I'm still not knocking on the door. I'm just kind of slipping into the house where God is in that like kind of whole Matthew scenario of knocking, you'll find, or seeking, you'll find. I was like, yeah, cool, I'll slip in through the back entrance, I'll sit here, I'll go on my phone, and then I'll slip out again. I'm never going to look up and see you guys, which is what I did. Coming into the first year of uni was monumental, I guess. It was everything, it was a risk-free strategy, but it was a new start, so it's kind of this whole torment in my head of, well, I've got to do it because it's risk-free, but it's a new start, which I absolutely hate. And this is when, like alarm bells started going off in my head. My girlfriend would go to my girlfriend would go to a different uni. She'd enjoy it, she'd be going to Nottingham, she did. She was gonna do a really, really good degree, so she was gonna be like a chartered chemical engineer coming out. So potentially there was a company lining up for like a 70 grand startup paycheck. So I just had to go through 3 years because she was so like head over heels for me that literally, she was like, you can just be a stay-at-home parent like the whole of your life if you want, like I'll just work. And she was that like way kind of like in love with me. So it was weird because I wasn't the same, but I was just like risk-free, boom,
strategy right there. I'll just stay at home the rest of my life. I'll just go through uni. But then first term of uni comes, and then I realise for the first time that the life that everyone's living, that I'm also living, isn't right. And then, like, I'd see that at like an excess level, that kind of everyone around me were doing things that they were doing at 18, but just to another level again, because there's no parents, there's no nothing, you're just there. And they're doing it every day for months. And that, like, yeah, weird, just alarm bells start ticking. And then I realised that actually I hated my course, that I loved designing, but I didn't love designing for the reasons everyone wanted to design. So with 18 years old, I wanted to go and be an Apple designer, like, in regards to, I wanted to design phones, I wanted to do all of that, I wanted to make them look nice. And then first term of uni, I realised that that kind of design is mainly, that ultimately industrial design is not the place I wanted to be, because just there was no morals there. And for the first time, I properly realised I had no morals. I'd step into kind of some of the stuff that the CU was doing. I'd go to some of their events, again, just to socialise after, but it just so happened that I came to one Bible study where it was just me and the guy leading the Bible study. I was like, well, in this moment, you can't really ignore him. I can't just be texting when it's just him talking to me. It might be a little bit rude. And God would ordain it that he would be doing a Bible study on 1 John. And 1 John's really impacted me since that moment, because obviously it talks about, like, if you say you're living in the light, you're living in darkness, then you're a liar. And you're not going to see God. I say, oh, actually, that's an awakening moment right there. Yeah, I've said to people that I'm a Christian, I'm not it, though. I'm definitely not it. And I was like, I will never see Jesus. I will never spend eternity with him, because I'm living in darkness. Everything about my life is darkness. So kind of a massive bomb exploded in my heart in that moment. And that was towards the end of first term. So my girlfriend would come home for the Christmas break. And I knew in that moment, I was like, oh, I'm in a relationship that I don't want to be in anymore. I was like, this is hard. Like, I've got a decision to make. And I would then go enter in properly to church. So I started entering into City Church. So I was like, I want something. So I started desiring for the first time God. I started desiring for the first time relationship with this God, and entertaining that it might actually be possible this is true. So that's what I did. And my friend challenged me one day and was like, well, she said, is your girlfriend a Christian? And I was like, no. But it was the first time that I realized that neither was I properly, other than the 1 John experience. So the next day, I broke up with my girlfriend and I made a decision. I was like, no, I'm all in now. I'm all in, I'm making decisions. I sacrificed everything that kind of I was living for, other than uni, because I'd already paid to be there. So I just had to change my heart in that process. But yeah, I broke up with my girlfriend at the time. And I was just like, God, like, if you're real, I want to give you everything that I have. And I was like, that includes that. And just realizing kind of just how messed up you are is when you turn to God because he loves you, but you break someone's heart in the process of turning to someone who loves you. Like, that's, I guess that was one of the big things. I was like, oh man, I'm real messed up. Like, breaking someone's heart in order to, like, turn to the one who loves me before time even began. That was one of the most emotional things I've had to go through and process. And just over maybe the space of a month, God would just batter my heart with love. Sorry, that sounded quite bad. So I'm going to do something bad to me. He didn't. It was really good. He healed me over a load of things that I desperately needed healing of. So kind of the bitter, scared, anxious little kind of fat kid that was inside of me still. It wasn't external. I had a shell. Obviously, like, I had a massive shell. But like the bitter little kind of fact that I still felt like I was over the space of a month was eradicated, and he just eroded at it with love. And these just like hard parts of my heart that were just solid, like I felt it, I knew it, I knew it was solid, I knew that I wasn't living right, but those parts of my heart that was just that I felt like I hated, he would just erode at, like, day after day, moment after moment, until my heart was fleshy and moldable. And I love the phrase where it's like, obviously, he's the pot, where the clay, because I work with clay. So I'm a ceramicist and I work with wood as well. But yeah, like, I understand that fully. I understand what it looks like to work on clay and to make something beautiful from it. So to know that he'd do that for me and to do that to my heart was something groundbreaking for me. I realized for the first time that I had experienced love, that I had experienced something of God's goodness in my life, and I knew he was real. So from that moment, I literally This is where I just want to highlight like a few passages. There was literally, I don't know if you like, so the early church period, they call it like the boom period, don't they? Where like obviously Jesus died, came back, and then boom, like everyone went out and did random things or crazy miraculous things, and just it was Christians everywhere. I experienced like a boom period in my heart where it's like, I don't know how to describe it, other than, no, maybe like a firework. So like just boom, like firework, and then like the sparks just go like everywhere. I was like, I'm alive for the first time. I've experienced something of God for the first time in my life, even though I've been in church, I never experienced him. So I encountered him for the first time. Just, yeah, within the space of a month, it was kind of blindingly obvious to me that I had made a mess of the first part of my life, and I'd wasted a lot of time, because ultimately the best place probably to reach like people for Jesus is probably school, because you're with them every day for 7 years. Potentially 14 years if you go to primary school then as well. I was like, oh God, I've wasted that, but I don't want to waste a moment now. I don't want to waste one single second of what you've got for me now. So I was like, let's do it, let's go for this. And just then, mission really impacted my heart, because I knew that I had to do that, I knew that I wanted to do that, and I knew that this invitation to kind of heaven that I'd accepted through Jesus dying on the cross was real for me, but real for everyone in my uni too. And I'd see that the people who were desiring exactly the same things I was the month previous needed Jesus just as desperately as I did. So from that, through kind of like the way God speaks to me primarily is probably through, well, obviously through the Word, but through reading the Word and having visions, or just from Him giving me pictures. So one of the most beautiful pictures that He gave me just from the very word go was as me as a toddler. And it's like, I cried my eyes out after getting this kind of realization. He was just like, I was there as a little toddler, walking in the living room, or trying to walk. I was trying to walk. I couldn't yet walk. I don't know what's that period of time when you baby can't walk. No, they're a toddler yet, they're not toddling around. Probably not.
Crawling?
Crawling, yeah. I was a little crawler. Does that make sense? I don't think it does. We'll go with it. So I was just crawling around. In my head thinking, yeah, this is fine, I'm doing whatever, I'm going for it. Knowing though that I couldn't walk, I was desperate to walk. So, you know, in this vision, I was like crawling around and then putting one foot up and then about to get my other foot up and try and walk a little bit, and I'd just crumple. And I'd be crying on the floor, and then in this vision, God's there in like a little living room chair, just sitting there and being like, like my son, just let me hold you, let me like help you with this, let me hold your hands and let you walk with me. I was like, no, I can do it, I'll find something else to help. Even though God, my father was right there trying to help me through that period, I was sat there like, no, I'm gonna turn to something else, and this is the way I was going. But in this vision then, I finally look up and I'm like, you wanna help me? This is the only way I'm going to do it. This is the only way that I'm going to get through all these things, is if I just look up and give you my hand and let you help me. So in this vision, I let him take my hand, and in this vision, he's walking with me, and he's just like, every step, he's like, come on, you can keep going, we're going to grow through it, we're going to do it, let's do it, let's walk. And he was encouraging me, and for the first time, I felt real encouragement on my heart that like meant something to me, and for the first time, I was able to walk in something that God wanted me to walk in. And that was really beautiful for me. So that vision then just transformed my view of life. And I'd still know, though, that I'd have to walk back into uni, into a course that ultimately I didn't want anything to do with, because industrial design isn't a God-honoring process, really, for the mainstream kind of design companies. And the way that the design incorporated oscillations or whatever, like anything, they just do a lot for money and a little for the customers. And I was like, I can't design it that way, guys. But this vision would help me, because he was like, okay, we're going to walk through it together. And then, probably know the song where it's like, we welcome you with praise. This is just another one of my visions very early on, that like we were singing that song in church, and it would break my heart again, because I'd be like, God, I want to change this design world there. Okay, like, if no one else will, then right now through this course, let me do something real for design. Let me bring something of you into this place. But God, I'm the only Christian on my course in 3 years of product design, about 300 people. I'm the only Christian, God. So how am I even going to do this? All my lecturers profess to be an atheist, and they lecture from an atheist point of view. I'm like, how on earth am I going to do this? And he was, through that song, Welcome You With Praise, he was just really like symbolically in my heart put like a vision of me walking into uni and just putting the red carpet into uni. It was me laying out the red carpet. And he was like, even if it's only you, sing that song, praise me when you're in uni, and I will enter that place. He's like, let me come with you. He's like, I only need you in there. He's like, I don't even need you in there, but like, it's my blessing to you that I'm going to do it for you through you. So it was literally like, oh, okay, God, like, if it's just me then, I'm going to stand up for who you are. I'm going to stand up for what I believe design should be. I'm going to stand up for morality and design. That I'm going to stand up against the things that just are designed something slightly different with the exact same interior, slightly different exterior, sell it to the same customers for much more money. Like, that's the nature of what I have to do. I was like, no. So I then go and risk all my grades by not doing what they told me to do. And they then continuously try and give me harder briefs and more tight briefs. There's this one brief where I had to put all freedom with purely because they left out a comma, which changed the entire sentence of what I was doing. So I was allowed to do whatever I wanted. But other than that, they double checked or triple checked every sentence they put in. So they're like, we're going to break you. And that was their desire. Like, they wanted to break me because they wanted me to be like their mold. I was like, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stand. And actually, the story of Daniel, that obviously we all know, is massively impacted for that. He's like, cool, I'm going to come. I'm going to like design with you. I'm not going to worship you. I'm not going to worship the same things you worship. I'm not going to worship money. And I agree, like, you came into this course desiring to do that. In your interview, you said you wanted to go and work for Apple. I'm like, hey, I'm different now. I've met with Jesus. And they're like, oh, you're crackhead, Bruce, you're mad. And that was ultimately their view of me. They thought I was crazy. But yeah, he would just give me this like encouragement and this vision to do that. And then for that, like, kind of, it makes you then, I guess in my heart, I was a little bit like, well, I'm just doing work for him. And I'm not really enjoying him as much. I was in my private life, but within design, I was not properly enjoying God. So he gave me another vision that was just me dancing with him. It sounds a little bit like what Theresa May's childhood was like, but basically I was in a wheat field. And I was dancing with God. And that really, that was something I really treasured in my heart. Because I didn't know that he wanted that from me. I knew that he loved me and loved me as a father, and obviously he called me to reach other people, but to enjoy him and to be in a wheat field with him and dance around a bonfire with him was something that I'd never known before of God. I didn't know that he desired for me to enjoy him and he enjoys me enjoying him. I was like, oh my word, and that would then set up another fire in my heart. I was like, I'm going to enjoy working with you, God, but I'm going to enjoy you just in everything I do. So then to understand that he would receive glory from me enjoying food, from enjoying friendship, from enjoying fellowship, just to know that he would receive glory from that and would take delight in that, transformed everything I did about design. And then I was coming up to the end of the year then for me, so the end of second year. So I'd gone through first year, then came to the end of second year, and I was like adamant. I was like, okay, I'm going into third year, and to be fair, I may just fail third year because I know exactly what they're gonna do to me. And they even came up to me and were like, Richie, you're gonna die, like, you're not gonna be able to do what you've been doing for the past 2 years. And really, the only year that counted for my degree was the third year, so literally everything was riding on me doing third year. I was getting to this point in my head, I was like, am I gonna crack? It's like, is this going to be me? Like, I'm coming to probably the biggest point in my life, and I'm like, God. And then I was obviously reminded of the story of Daniel's thrown into the furnace, and he's there in the furnace, just chilling. I don't even sweat. I'm sweating more now than he was in a furnace. And I like just reading through the Daniel story and seeing that and being like, oh, okay, God, I'm going to stand for you no matter what. So I had that in my heart. I had that revelation of, okay, cool, whatever happens, happens. I'm going with this. But my lecturers would come up to me, sit me down and be like, no, we should need to get off this course. Like, we can't have you in third year. I said, what do you mean? You're literally going to drown, like, and we're going to drown you. Like, we're going to try. We're going to try our biggest, like, and our best to, like, crack you right now. I was like, oh, okay. And then they were like, but we'll offer you a different course. So it's like, interesting. Massive curveball in third year. Knowing full well, like, in my heart, that I hated risks as a kid. So it's like, oh, this is a massive risk for me. I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. So they offered me this course that was exactly the description of Exodus 31. May not be Exodus 31. Like, the first time the Holy Spirit is put inside a man, and he designs the Ark of the Covenant, where he's like, he has to work in gold, metals, stone, wood, ceramic, all of that. Like, the exact description of this course was the exact description of the first time the Holy Spirit was in a man to design. So that was interesting because I looked and I was like, wow, that's really cool. And actually, it was called designer maker. So you just design and make. And you design and make for the enjoyment of designing and making, which is wicked, which is what I wanted to do, but I didn't know if it was right. So then I was really interested in it because I had a 2-month period to decide what I was going to do. And this whole 2 months, my lecturer was like, please do it. Please take the room. Please, please, please. I don't want you to be in there. I don't want it around you. I kind of like you. I'm going to have to. So yeah, just went through this period then. Deciding, I was worried. And I came back to him and I was like, cool, I'll pray over it. And he was like, why do I have to pray over it? Just take the move. Like, I have to pray over it. I need to know God wants me to do it. So yeah, I'd come back to him, be like, nope, God say no. It's like, oh my days. So we're just going through this period of 2 months consistently where he was like, stop talking to God and just do it. I was like, no, start talking to God and you'll realize why I'm talking to God. And he's like, no, we're sharp. So then eventually at the end of the 2 month period, I was then, like, it was the last weekend that I had to decide. He was like, you've gone 2 months and you're still not going to do it. So he's like, okay, you're going to be on stage here with us. It was the last weekend where God just came down on me on like the Friday night. He was like, move, make the move. It's like, oh, crazy. You waited for the last weekend. But it was kind of, the Isaac and Abraham story where obviously he takes him up the mountain about to sacrifice his son and obviously he doesn't. It was kind of like that, where it was like, my heart had to be ready, no matter what. My heart had to be ready to to stay and just be drowned in front of all my friends and my co-peers and get absolutely torn apart in all my lectures, get torn apart in everything I was doing. My heart had to be ready to do that before God, before he'd step in and like give me a vision of what the future was going to look like. And he was just like, do it. I was like, oh, cool, okay, I'm going to do it. But then I had to assess my heart and be like, well, also, I hate risks, and this is a massive risk, because I don't have any of the skills to do this course, and it's a third year, and a uni that makes your third year 100%. So I was like, whatever I come out with this year, in my first year of developing skills in all these random areas, is going to be my final grade for uni. And so basically, I take that move, and I make that move, and in this whole time, my heart was sold out, like, for God, for the first time. And it was a really beautiful time for me, and a beautiful time in regards to being in the university, Christian Unions, and really having a heart with all those guys just to see our uni changed for Jesus and transformed into likeness of Jesus. And as a cohort, we were all desiring that. There was only about 12, 13 of us trying to attempt to reach 20,000. We made some movements, and like, I'm really thankful to God for that. And actually, there's a few passages that I just want to say. I don't want to preach from them because I'm not here to do that. But yeah, there's a few passages that really like transformed everything for me. I just want to share those things with you. So one of them is Ephesians 6, obviously the armor of God. But towards the end of that, Paul is obviously in prison whilst he's writing it. And verse 19 and 20 is just prayer. So for me, that whenever I speak, words may be given me, that I would fearlessly make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains. Pray that I may declare it fearlessly, as I should. As I go, ooh. Like, I feel like I'm an ambassador in chains. I feel like, yeah, I love Jesus, but I'm trying, like, I'm being chained up by these, like, product design infrastructure. And he was just like, pray that I would fearlessly make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains. That broke me. So I was like, oh, like, he could pray anything there. He's talking to his church. He's like, pray that I could be let out of prison, please, because I'd love to come and see him. I'd love to go and do some stuff. I'd love to go to the beach. But he was like, nah, I'm happy here. I'm happy whatever's going on. I'm in prison. I know I'm in prison. But that doesn't make the blindest bit of difference, because if I'm in prison, there's people I could reach in prison. Just pray for me that whenever I speak, words would be given to me that I would fearlessly make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains. Pray that I may declare it fearlessly as I should. So that, huge, absolutely massive for me. And then there was just Romans 12 as well. So I love all the versions of Romans 12, like whatever version of the Bible you're reading. Like, when you're on your way to uni, you kind of need like a devotional type set. So I did read the message one. Sorry if you hate it. Just disclaimer. So I have read the other versions. I do like the other versions. So Romans 12, in the message, it's just like, so here's what I want you to do. God helping you take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him.
don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. When you recognize what He wants from you, quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you. He develops well-formed maturity in you. Massive, unreal. And then another one, so Jesus heals a blind man at Bethsaida. And he came to Bethsaida, and some people brought to him a blind man and begged him to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand, led him out of the village. When he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked, "Did you see anything?" And he looked up and said, "I see people, but they look like trees walking." So then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again. He opened his eyes, his heart, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. And he sent him home, saying, "Don't enter the village." And it's just this like crazy moment where, obviously, in this passage, Jesus is healing this man, but I don't know why Jesus does it, but obviously just gives him like a half healing kind of thing. Where he's just like, "Open your eyes, do you see anything?" And he's like, "Yeah, I see people, but they look like trees." Crazy statement, because he's already seen. He knows what trees look like, evidently. He must have seen them before, so this guy's seen clearly at some point. So to know what trees look like, and he's like, "I can kind of see you, but it's kind of blurry." And then he'd be like, "Okay, cool." And it's kind of like in that moment, he's like, "Well, I want to see more." So he spits on his eyes again, lays his hand on them, and he opens, and his sight was restored. And that, like, for me, it was my story. Like, I'd seen a little bit as a kid. I knew what it looked like to see Jesus, but I didn't know that for myself. So obviously I was blinded for such a long time. In that little period of time, it was like he just laid his eyes on me. I was like, "God, I want to see more of you." And in a sermon by another guy, it's really cool because he just points out that his friends brought him, the man who was blind, to Jesus' feet. And I was like, how symbolic is that of what we're meant to do? We're just meant to bring people to Jesus' feet. That's it. If we care about our friends enough, like our blind friends, if we care about them enough, let us drag them to Jesus' feet. Like, "God, please do something in their lives. Please. I can't do it, God, but you can. So I'm going to bring them to your feet. Because you're the one who heals. You're the one who restores. You're the one who rebuilds. You're the one who brings life. You're the one who does all of that. So I'm going to bring them to your feet." So for me, for my heart, it was just, oh man, I love my friends, so I want them to see Jesus. So anything I could do for them was just bring them to Jesus' feet. So for the past kind of 2.5 years, that's been my greatest desire, to just to bring people to Jesus' feet, see lives transformed by Jesus, for him to just not spit on his eyes. I don't know, probably could have done it another way, but I'm not like, "Oh God, spit on my face." But just for God to do something, and that's been really transformative. So kind of those three things together: give everything to him that you do, like, "Be a living sacrifice." Also, "God, would you make me fearless in what I say, but would they be your words that are said to people? And let me bring people to your feet." And then just kind of three models alongside my personal devotion of just like, I just love Jesus now. Like, I love him because he's great. I love him because he's kind. I love him because he loves me. Obviously, I love him because he died for me. And I wouldn't know life without that. Absolutely wouldn't. But then three kind of things that just made like a manifesto in my soul. Just be like, deep down, like, "God transformed a stone heart and made it fleshy so that I could go and, you know, help people to see God more clearly in a place that was desperate for him in universities." And that's kind of to where I'm at now. There's one other thing from Zechariah 2, verses, I think it's, yeah, so it's, hang on, I got my page a little bit. Yeah, okay, got it. Future prosperity of Jerusalem. So verse 2 is, "When I looked again, I saw a man with a measuring line in his hand. 'Where are you going?' I asked. He replied, 'I'm going to measure Jerusalem to see how wide and how long it is.' Then the angel who was with me went to meet a second angel who was coming toward him. The other angel said, 'Hurry and say to that young man, Jerusalem will someday be so full of people and livestock that there won't be room for everyone. Many will live outside the walls. Then I myself will protect them with a wall of fire. I will be a wall of fire protecting them, and I will be the glory inside the city.'" Obviously, that's like a vision in Zechariah that he sees for Jerusalem, but it's a vision of my own heart. Like, if I could describe that in any way, it's just, I build walls. He's like, "I'm measuring these walls. I'm seeing how big they are. And that was me. Like, I had balls as a kid. Like, I don't think many people knew the real me. I didn't even properly know the real me, because I even protected myself from seeing the real me by building these massive walls around this Jerusalem in my heart. And it wasn't good. It was dying. It was desolate. And then in me measuring that, what would God do? He would come and just say, "Ah, Reese, like, you don't understand. I want to make you so fruitful. Like, I want your heart to be such a luscious place, such a place of life, that your walls that you made won't be able to contain me." And that's crazy for my heart to understand, that the walls I've built for myself, God would go and flood in that, and would just like wash that out, and he would flood outside of that, and he himself would be a wall of fire protecting me. That's something I didn't know before. He himself would protect me from even my walls that I built up for him. That's crazy. That's a mad level of love from God. And that's what I came to understand. Also, shout out to, I mentioned it on the way to, he's my girl, friend. Yeah, I just realized I didn't give her a shout out. And she's been great. So she's like, she's worked with Message Wells and she loves good mission. So that's really developed my heart for mission too, by just being like alongside her in that. And yeah, I think I'll finish there with just that. I'll just read it again. So when I looked again, I saw a man with a measuring line in his hand. "Where are you going?" I asked. He replied, "I am going to measure Jerusalem to see how wide and how long it is." Then the angel who was with me went to meet a second angel who was coming towards him. The other angel said, "Hurry and say to that young man, Jerusalem will someday be so full of people and livestock that there won't be enough room for everyone. Many will live outside of those walls. Then I myself will be a protective wall of fire around Jerusalem, says the Lord, and I will be the glory inside the city." Madness. He protects, he builds, he restores, he loves, he cares, he cherishes, he brings bones to life, he puts flesh and muscle and life on those things, he breathes life in those bones, he loved me before I was born. Boy, do I wish that I realized that more than 3 years ago. But he's got glory now, because he's transformed my life, and he deserves glory for that, he deserves everything. All my gratitude, all my praise, all my thanks for that. So thank you very much for having me. Thank you very much for having me. I love you guys. I'll leave it there.